Okay. Now Lynn will introduce our keynote speaker, and we will pass control over to him.
Thanks, Gary. I'm Lynn Ursary with the U.S. Geological Survey. First, let me welcome you to the USGS's National Center and to this SOCOP workshop. They've given me the honor of introducing our keynote speaker, who is Professor Amit Sheth. I knew Amit when we were both professors at the University of Georgia. Dr. Sheth now is a computer scientist at Wright State University in Dayton, Ohio. He is the LexisNexis Ohio Eminent Scholar for Advanced Data Management and Analysis. Prior to the establishment of the NOAA Center, which he founded, he's at Wright State University. He served as director of the Large Scale Distributed Information Systems Laboratory at the University of Georgia. Dr. Sheth's research areas include semantic interoperability, integration, and the semantic web, workflow management and semantic web services, information integration, and I'll mention just one of his awards and accomplishments. He's been elected as an IEEE Fellow for contributions to information integration and workflow management. Dr. Sheth will can give us a presentation on spatial semantics. Hammett?
Okay. Let's see. I got a bit carried away and ended up putting together quite a few slides. So some slides I will be rather whizzing through, but I am quite hopeful that I'll be able to get the main ideas across. So if you really want to interrupt me, you can use the chat. Hopefully I will be able to see that and respond to you. Otherwise, we can, if there is a time, then we can take questions at the end. So let's look at the title, or what that implies in a way what I want to cover. I want to focus on spatial semantics for interoperability and analysis, but primarily in the context of Web 3.0. So I'll define what I mean by Web 3.0, at least what it means to me. And when we are building applications in Web, as I said, I'm going to take the context of Web 3.0, and in that context, why and where spatial semantics play an important role, and what kind of technologies are coming about where spatial semantics plays a role. Hopefully, you will see that at least my take is somewhat non-traditional. I have a one-slide overview of what my center does, or at least some part of my center does. We are in Ohio Center of Excellence. We have 15 faculty from 4 different colleges, 45-plus PhD students, excellent collaborations with industry and such. And we've been using semantics and studying the role of semantics from low-level infrastructure and system issues to high-level issues about building intelligent applications. So you can see a variety of technologies, where the semantics plays a role in our center. And if you go to noesis.org in the projects, you can look up a variety of projects in each of these areas. All right. So let me paint the overall context of Web 3.0. We started out with a web of pages or web of documents, and we went to web of databases, dynamic web pages, and dynamic website. We got into web of resources. We have services that can wrap any data set or any application and make it accessible ubiquitously. Then we got into web of people, user web or web 2.0 and social networking, user created data. And then we now kind of see web as a source of information, knowledge, and more. And we expect web to give answers to our complex questions. Over the period of time, as we have gone, I've seen increasing role of semantics. And you also see the way semantics are used, going from keywords to patterns to objects to events and situations. And eventually, I hope that we'll see technology that will be assimilated in the life and improve our experience. I call that computing for human experience. There is a piece that I had in IEEE Internet Computing that discussed the vision. Now, as just two of the common observations are that we deal with increasing variety or heterogeneity of data. We have data, web of pages, documents, databases, all kind of stuff that I mentioned on the previous slide. Spatial information is a very rapidly increasing set of that. I'll come to that very shortly. And there is exponential growth of each of the kind of data, especially such things as, say, sensor data, as well as social data. So, you know, just an example in mobile data, I pointed out some growth in that data. What happens is that in a large class of intelligent applications that are emerging, what you find is that we utilize large amount of both historical and recent or real data of various types from multiple sources, and a lot of this data has spatial property that we not only do search for this data, but also analysis of an insight and look for insight from the data. That means we have applications that are more intelligent, we look for, you know, in particularly the semantics that are spatial in nature, temporal semantics, thematic or domain-specific semantics, and increasingly use background knowledge. In this talk, I will focus on how spatial semantics is a key component in building many Web 3.0 applications. So I start out with a seemingly simple query. What schools in Ohio should now be closed due to inclement weather? And when you start looking at this application and how you might analyze that and how you can get an answer to a user, somebody in the government offices or in, you know, that has to look at this and analyze current situation, you need a lot of things to happen to be able to answer these questions. So the kind of technologies that may need to be integrated to answer these questions include spatial aggregation, we call semantic sensor web, automatic machine perception or active machine perception, link sensor data, and analysis of streaming real-time data. And in many of these things, again, you'll see that there will be role of spatial semantics. So, with this query as a driving example, I'm going to walk through some of the interesting things that are happening, some of the technologies that are being developed and put together that involve spatial semantics. So let's look at technology number one, spatial aggregation. And this particular technology would allow you to, answer questions or sub-questions associated with the core question: what schools are in Ohio? What weather sensors are near each of the schools? So to be able to answer these questions, you need to use partonomy to aggregate spatial regions. You need to query over spatial, what spatial aggregation is, that this will support partonomy to query over spatial regions of different level of granularity. And you may need to sort of combine data at a low level, such as information, related to schools in a district, to higher levels, such as state, that are schools are in a state. So query is looking for what schools are in the state, but the data tells you what are, the school and school districts. And then you have to somehow connect that to the state as a whole. Now, what happens today? Just a very quick state of the art. Clearly, there's a huge availability of spatial information. You can go to Google Map and you can type in schools in Ohio. What will be interesting is that instead of giving you schools in Ohio, it will give you schools near Ohio. And thereby, you'll see that there are schools that are not just limited to, Ohio. May make it, more specific. For example, I say schools in Greene County, you'll see that it's trying to do syntactic match here. So it says, did you mean green street, and so that's where the green is matched there. And then you can become, you know, more specific and actually type in schools in Greene County, Ohio, and it will start, I think giving you better answer. But nevertheless, if you, take this map at the high level of granularity, it will also show you schools that are outside Greene County, and it really doesn't have, the demarcation. It does not understand that it's within, that you are interested in schools within Greene County only, and not just in the surrounding counties. So this becomes issue. This issue is very relevant in that once again you have spatial data that is becoming more significant day by day. And it's crucial for all multitude of applications, and it is generated by multitude of applications. You have social networks that create spatial data, GPS that gives you that, military situations create a lot of spatial data, there are location-aware services, there's weather data, all of these are spatial components. And all of these are being put out on the web in very, very large quantity. And this is continuously increasing, as I said, so all these things are coming up. One of the interesting things is that naive or not so naive users, but users that may be distributed all around the world, may contribute to the creation of spatial data. For example, creation of geo names or open street maps and all that. So many, many users come together, bring their pieces of data, put it on the web, but there are then significant challenges in utilizing this data. So what we want is to be able to automatically align what user wants to the spatial information of interest through a bunch of intervening semantic operators. The problem is that existing approaches only analyze spatial information and queries at a lexical and syntactic level, that there's mismatches are common as to how a query is expressed versus how information is represented. So when you say find schools in New Jersey, there would be that you may not find answers because it only knows about counties are in state but not schools in state. And then there are a lot of ambiguity with natural language. Schools in Greene County, in may not be understood by the system. What needs to be done is that we need to build systems that reduces users' burden for having to know how information of interest is represented and structured to enable access to, by broad population, because people are not going to understand and use a very well-defined query languages for what they want. A researcher or scientist at USGS may be interested in doing so, but many people, a policymaker or decision maker in a state is not going to do that. We need to be able to resolve the mismatches between the query and the data, that we need to be able to resolve ambiguous relationship between entities based on natural language to reduce the amount of wrong information that is retrieved. Today, I'm going to now jump and make a little bit of leap of faith to narrow the scope. I'm going to primarily talk about semantic web data. I'll simply note that the kind of things that I have mentioned, the kind of data that I have mentioned, are all available in very, very large quantity in semantic web format, meaning in RDF, Resource Description Framework. Sparkle is the query language for that. And there are some enhancements to that that support regular expressions along with Sparkle, for example. So our query, schools located in the state of Ohio, in a perfect scenario, you might have schools associated with Ohio. That's wonderful. But in quite likelihood, you are going to have schools with parent related to county and county school related to Ohio. So you'd have to deal with information in this form while the query may be in the former form. How would you deal with that? And what would you do? What kind of spatial semantics would you support? So what you do is to define operators to ease writing expressive queries by implicit usage of semantic relations between query terms, and that way take away the burden of expressing name relations in the quarry. And one of the things, one of my student did, for example, was to borrow heavily upon Vincent's taxonomy of part-whole relations, something that you all will be very familiar with, and embed that into the whole query processing framework, any whole data processing framework. So we had we developed a rule-based approach to allow applications in different domains with appropriate modifications. I'll show a kind of a snapshot of that. And what we developed was this Spark, partonomical relationship-based query rewriting system. So what it did was to take these meta rules for Vincent's category, for transitivity, for overlap, for spatial inclusion, this kind of stuff. These are all well known to everybody, all of you in working in geospatial data and spatial semantics. But to incorporate that within the system. So what it can do is that for a query of the former kind, schools in state is rewritten automatically behind the scene to schools in county and county in state. And so I won't go into a lot of details and comparisons. These are all in the papers. But here we did a study on comparing Sparkle with PA Sparkle, which supports the regular expressions with this PARQ in terms of ease of writing, expressivity, the number of scenarios it supports, and whether it is schema agnostic. And interesting thing was we evaluated, and the fact that we evaluated is not important to this audience, but what is important is the kind of queries we realize. National Geographic B, or British administration's geography related queries, these are all very broad-based, end-user-centric applications involving spatial semantics. And what we showed was that we could build effectively queries that are involved in such broad exercises into the precise queries that we map against data at different levels of granularity. And we use sort of human respondents unfamiliar with the ontology to develop the queries and just see the sample queries that could be expressed here. Since I have limited time, I can't go into a lot of details here, but you can see the queries are pretty interesting, pretty natural, pretty complex. In which English county, also known as the Jurassic Coast, because of many fossils we found there, will you find at the village of Weir Hackett? Right, so these kind of queries are something that end user may be interested in, and how can you use spatial semantics to represent these queries and against existing data sets, naturally existing data sets. And there were, evaluations. I don't want to discuss those things in detail, but it showed that you can do fairly well once you kind of embed additional semantics in your query processing systems. And so the conclusion is that query engines today expect users to know data set structure and pose well from queries, and that is something very hard for users to do. So we need to be able to exploit semantic relations between concepts, and we need to be able to provide system with behind-the-scene rewrite of queries to remove the burden of knowing the structure of the data. The second technology is semantic sensor web technology. That we have, starting with our original query about inclement weather and school closing in Ohio, here are other sub-queries that you have to ask. What is inclement weather? What sensors in the Ohio capable of detecting inclement weather, or weather for that matter? What are the sensors near the school? What observations these sensors are generating now? And, are these observations providing evidence for inclement weather? So, this leads to something very interesting, and this is something that I increasingly recognize, that you need to be able to, in doing this kind of query processing, you need quite a bit of machinery, meaning it is not possible to use a unimodal, singular, clean solution by using, say, spatial ontology or such. In this case, if you look at it, you need to be able to model sensors, For example, there is sensor observation ontology that has been developed in Worldwide Web Consortium's incubator in semantic sensor networking. I am co-chairing that group. There is spatial ontology and the temporal ontologies. There is a temporal ontology, and there will be a specific domain ontology. In this case, weather ontology. In other cases, you may have water ontology and so on and so forth. And you need to be able to generate abstractions that matter to human. So what matters to human is inclement weather. Human is, that end user is hardly interested in the temperature being 32.1 degree. Right? That doesn't matter to that. That what matters to the human is something like what is an inclement weather. We're interested in whether there's a blizzard. We're not interested in very specific precipitation and wind speed and visibility kind of data. So that is a problem. For that, the base is built by semantic sensor web work. You can Google semantic sensor web and come to a host of work in this area. But the idea is that you want to link the physical space with the information space. And you want to, you know, have sensor that observes environment and things like that, and you get the data, and from that you need to get the perceptions that matter to human that give you situational awareness. And you have sensors now that are ubiquitous. There are 40 plus billion mobile sensors. Unfortunately, much state of the technology is tailpipe that allow you to get access to a single sensor at a time. But we want to make this sensor data free, but with the freedom comes responsibility, and that you want to, discover. One of the things you need to do is, for with that freedom, how to discover and access and search the data. So OGC has built this semantic sensor web sensor web enablement framework. I believe all of you would be familiar with that. Then you need to be able to integrate the data together when it comes to data from different sources. You have a syntactic level solutions using XML that SWE supports, and semantic models OWL and RDS level that WCC's semantic sensor networking incubator supports. So XD deliverables are ontology for semantically describing sensors and illustrate relationship between OGC sensor web enablement language standards and the high level ontologies. And the next thing is to convert these numbers and observations that sensors have into symbols that are perceptions that that humans are interested in. There is an overall architecture of the system that we have that allows you to take from data all the way to be able to build interesting applications. I won't again discuss this in detail, but let me show you a very, very quick demo of this. Here is a little demo this, which is available on the web, and I'm going to only show you a very salient part of it. Here the data comes from 20,000 plus weather sensors from Mesoverse network, and web-enabled sensor observation services provides the data, which automatically takes all the sensor data into and converts it into RDF, and tags it with regards to a variety of ontologies, spatial, temporal, and thematic, meaning domain-specific ontologies. You have phenomena of where these are the kind of data, dew point or wind gust, that is what sensors report. But on the top of it, you have features. For example, freezing rain or blizzard. Now, these involve reasoning on the top of low-level features. This involves a blizzard involves a set of rules over visibility and wind speed and precipitation. And these are done automatically. These are specified as rules or ontologies. There is issues about trust and belief. I won't go into that. Here you are choosing some. You enter in blizzard, and on certain date, or in some geographical region, and then the system will come back with saying, you can see these two places on that particular date in particular region of interest. we found that there was blizzard. And then you can look up the specific sensor information, specific data came, and what data supported this particular conclusion. And then the next query is about freezing rain. In this case, you have a lot more results, and the same thing happens, goes on. So let me go back to the presentation again. So this gives you power of semantic sensor web. And remember that here, again, as part of the whole ecosystem of semantic computation, spatial semantics is one of the important things. The third one is active machine perception. Are these observations provide evidence for inclement weather, right? So we talked about example of blizzard. Here in our case, we have example of inclement weather. So the point here is to go from low-level observation to high-level abstractions that human is interested in. So perception is an active cyclic process of explaining observations by actively seeking or focusing on additional information. This is what we call active perception. So awareness of the situation involves that on the physical world you have sensors and we observe, and then again you have a physical world, things like an object that we perceive in symbolic form, and that is how we connect real world with the web. And in the formal theory of perceiving perception, we have specification, implementation, evaluation, and there is a paper on that. What we are talking about here is abstractions that are capable of representing observations and perceptions generated by either people or machines. So what you need here is to connect observation to quality. This is formally described in sensor or observational ontology. Then you have, perceiver that perceives entity. This is formally described in a perception ontology. Again, I wish I had time. I can describe in more detail what this perception ontology is and how does it work. And then you have background knowledge that indeed, this apple has a quality which is redness. Or apples can be red, and that is described in a domain ontology. The perception cycle is about not just, typically you have observation that is observed by something and that receives, that makes a perception. But the active perception or perception cycles is one that is that's a feedback loop which says, okay, now say it sends a focus to observer and says, give me more information, so that I can actively reach a particular conclusion, particular perception. And so the cyclic aspects of it is the perception cycle, which requires this entire, cycle of observation quality, and so on and so forth. There is a theoretical description of this. I won't go into that. There is an implementation that links, and there is an ecosystem of this implementation. Again, I won't describe in detail, but that involves use of this whole variety of ontologies. Here, by the way, you can see background knowledge. In this case, this is the weather ontology. And this shows some evaluation that shows how you can apply a variety of techniques that can optimize the way the observations are obtained so that you don't have to, you can reduce the number of observations to be processed to reach a high-level perception or conclusion that indeed there is inclement weather. So let me show you again a very small snapshot of a demo, and you may want to look at it in more detail. So in this particular demo, what you see is that there is basically weather data coming from a whole variety of this sensor data. And you see different colors on the left bottom, rain shower, rainstorm, flurry, and blizzard. These are the perceptions. And the bars that you see is a trust measure. Because my talk today does not focus on trust, so I won't discuss the trust aspect of it. But you can see here the perception being painted that as we process the data, you see that the bar is at the geolocation where there is a sensor pod, and it shows you a variety of then perceptions that are being observed at different geolocations. And so you got to kind of get an idea of what happens there. Again, jumping back to the presentation. The next technology of interest is link sensor data. There is a big thing that has happened in last year or two. This is called link open data, LOD. And a lot of people are essentially taking their higher quality data, and sometimes not so high quality data, but usually high quality data, and putting up on the web for public to use, data.gov. 6 to 8 billion people were recently put there. We recently took about nearly 2 billion of sensor data observations and put it on the link open data. And these become then available for access. And the important thing about link sensor data or link open data is the link aspect of it. So not only that you put the data on the web that you can access in you know common format, but you link it with each other. And here are some of the questions. What schools are in Ohio? What necessitates a policy issue? What necessitates school closing? What sensors can, detect weather and implement weather, so on and so forth, can be obtained using link open data. So, in our case, link sensor data, we took description of 20,000 weather sensors, and we put also observations, 1.7 billion people, up there for 7 major storms in the U.S. that occurred over a period of time. And that became part of this link open data ecosystem. So you have data of all these different kinds, and they become part of this link sensor data set, goes on the web. For example, this here you see link sensor data. This is contributed by our center, Noesis, which is put up there. And that is linked to the GeoNames data, right? So it gets more spatial specificity and usage. So GeoNames data set is linked, and so link data set located near GeoName, made publicly available, things of that nature. This is just this shows you some part of the data set that we made available. You can see a variety of hurricanes and blizzard for which we took the data and made it available, put it up publicly up there. And then it has become queryable. So what you see here is, for example, the observation data, example 70 degree Fahrenheit, measured by thermometer and sensor knowledge base, the kind of sensors that are there, that has a location near Dayton Airport. So there are all these 230,000 plus locations in GeoNames and so on and so forth. There are a lot of active data, there's a lot of static data, they all get linked together. So in the link sensor data, one of the applications we have in the semantic sensor web that utilizes link sensor data, you can start typing the query Dayton, and you can find the sensors in the near Dayton. You choose the sensor, it shows you on the map, here's the sensor. You can look up the latest, what are this, sensor, weather sensor ID, and by a click you can look at the latest observation. At that, here is a, map on which it is showing that particular sensor, and here is where it has a, you can click there further to look at very latest observation. So I won't again, in interest of time, show you details of it, but let's see if I can once again give you a glimpse of this thing in this application. Just to show you here, I'm just doing, walking through this thing. So you can see this is the, specific data that comes from the sensor. And you can do this on the fly, dynamically. You can do this, and there is a lot of other stuff that are there in terms of technology that I won't go into right now. Now, the last part, in the interest of time, analysis of streaming real-time data. What observations are these sensors generating now? I want to make decisions about closing the schools based on information that is near real-time or real-time. So here we have to convert raw data into semantically annotated data in real-time and analysis of this data to generate abstraction in real time. So you have host of real time data, real time streaming sensor data. You apply background knowledge and do semantic analysis to detect events, and you make it possible to search for or query events from the link open data. So in the link open data, I can go to geo names, and then while link data is mostly static, there is huge amount of streaming data that is out there, and what we can do is that we can map this huge amount of sensor data into abstractions over this data in the events that are connected to link open data. So what we can do is to start with the raw generated data, summary of phenomena into data, and then convert raw sensor data into ONM, which is a language according to SWE, and then that map that into RDF. Again, so remember, we are seeing the domain, using domain ontology and other ontologies in the process, and then we use these ontologies to detect events. So then instead of having the raw data, we can have event streams. And this event stream is associated with points with the elements in the link open data. So I can say I can associate event stream with a geo name. Then I can say, tell me the events that are occurring near this location. These kind of things are already emerging. And then you can answer this challenging query, what schools in Ohio should now be closed due to inclement weather? So this needs to be divided into sub-queries that can be answered using the previous technology. So to wrap it up, schools, what schools are in Ohio? We use spatial aggregation, we use paternal spatial relationship, and ask those questions that you see there. Then we use geonames.org containing this patronymical spatial relationship. Spatial aggregation executes the patronymical inference to convert general query into sub-queries that can be answered. Then what is inclement weather? This requires domain ontology that describes characteristics of inclement weather. So icy weather, a road, freezing temperature and precipitation, rain and snow. This uses semantic sensor web technology. What inclement weather necessitates school closing? This requires policy information. This may be available from data.gov. Then what sensors in Ohio are capable of detecting inclement weather? This requires ontological descriptions of sensors and weather to match sensor capability with weather characteristics. And then you have linked sensor data, that is this, so in this case we use that kind of information from LOD. So you combine semantic sensor web and link open data for this, or link sensor data for this, which is a component of link open data. Then sensors, what sensors are near schools in Ohio? You do spatial analysis to match locations to sensor locations that are nearby. And sensor description are linked in link sensor data. Then you say what observations are these sensors generating now, and you start talking about streaming sensor data, and you need to semantically annotate raw sensor observations and analyze them to detect events. So there's real-time event analysis on the streaming data that is being done. We have one of the projects, and there are others who work on this. And then, are these observations providing evidence of inclemental weather? Now you start getting the semantic sensor web into perceptions and higher level of abstractions, that humans are interested in, and so you used to work in active perception. And that brings together a whole variety of things that we put it here. These are the slides, and you can get to the papers and briefings and all that in much more detail than demos from here. I kind of end because I had a 45 minutes limit. I saw a message by somebody about something about Fullscreen. I had used Fullscreen all the way through, so I hope that you will remain. Let me go to back here and see if there are anything here or any questions.
Thank you, Amit. I think we're going to have a little bit of time for a question or two. Anyone have questions for Professor Schett?
This is Gary. I have a very quick question. You mentioned some interesting things in passing about your perception observation ontology as well as background knowledge. I'm wondering, from the community's point of view, are those publicly available? And can you, if so, can you send the link so that we can paste that, post that to people?
Yes, it is publicly available.
I'm having a little trouble hearing you, if you can step a little closer.
Yes, it is publicly available. In the perception part, there is mention of this paper here, Ontology of Perception. So I believe if you just Google Ontology of Perception, you should be able to get the answer to this question, this thing. There is a link from my references at the end to that work.
Is that in OWL, represented in OWL, and if so, could it be stored in a repository for general use?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is available in OWL, and it is available for general use.
Thanks, Amit. Any other questions? Thank you very much, Amit. We appreciate the talk.
Thank you.